Thank you very much, David, for the introduction. I'm going to talk about anomalies in Landau's Fermi liquid theory, and I think that the origin of this work is actually at the KITP, not directly related to any particular. I was in a program, but my thinking about this problem is simulated by the discussion that was going at the time at the KITP. It was a few years ago, and only recently, together with the postdoc at the IMT, Naoki Yamamoto, we understand a bit better than what I couldn't do a few years before. So this talk, the slides that I am going to present here are written somewhat in a hurry. So I would like to apologize if I make some typo mistakes or miss references, especially there are very few references in this talk, and I would appreciate if you tell me what I miss. So another let's see. So if I look at triangle anomalies in the Cooper image, the first one is the triangle anomaly, and the other one is the meter anomaly. The precise relationship between the two anomalies is beside the scope of this talk. I'm going to concentrate on this triangle anomaly. So what are the triangle anomalies, or the general chiral anomalies, it's called? They are inherently quantum features of quantum field theory. So the triangle anomalies is a feature of 4D quantum field theories. One can have a situation where the classical theory has a symmetry, but the symmetry is broken by quantum effect, which can be seen in different ways. One can, for example, compute this triangle loop graph and see that we cannot make all the currents in the participate in the correlation function conserved. Or one can think about the measure of the path integral. One cannot make this measure of the path integral to be invariant under all the classical symmetries. This has been a very fruitful direction to think, and it reveals deep connections between physics and topology. But the origin of the quantum anomalies is related to a very mundane problem of the decays of neutral fermions by 0 to 2 gamma. Naively, according to chiral symmetry, this decay is very highly suppressed, and it should disappear rapidly when the mass of the pi 0 becomes small. But in fact, the rate is not small, and it is because of the quantum anomaly. So, in a more physical picture, one can understand anomalies in a very simple example of Dirac massless fermions in an external magnetic field. So imagine that you solve the Dirac equations in a magnetic field. It is very similar to the Schrodinger equations. One finds that the eigenvalues of the Hamiltonians are organized in Landau levels. And the special thing about massless fermion is that the lowest Landau levels is not left-right degenerate, while all the other Landau levels are left-right degenerate. So if a fermion is massless, one can classify the fermions in helicities. The lowest Landau level of right-handed fermion is this one, with epsilon equal to Pz, where Pz is the component of the momentum along the direction of the magnetic field. And the n equals 0 Landau levels of the left-handed fermion is this one. According to if we consider the vacuum, then the chemical potential would be exactly at zero, and one has to fill all the energy level from zero down to minus infinity. Now, imagine that we turn on for a short duration of time an electric field. We turn on an electric field that pull these fermions along the direction of pz. That would lead to the following effect. All these electrons, well, sorry, by electron I always mean fermions. Any fermions in this talk can be alternatively called electrons. So these fermions will move, some of the fermions will move, the right-handed fermion will be pulled upward in the spectrum, and they will become particles above the zero energy level, and these fermions, left-handed fermion will be pulled down along the spectrum. The momentum will increase as a function of time. So yes, after we turn off this electric field, we will find some number of right-handed fermions and some number of left-handed holes. So it's very similar to the, so here what we see is that at the end, the total number of left-handed or right-handed particle is not conserved. The sum of the number of left and right-handed fermions is conserved in this process, but separately, the number of right-handed fermions changes here by 2 units, and the number of left-handed fermions changed by 2 units. So this is the essence of the equation of anomalies. The currents, the right-handed and the left-handed currents, are not conserved when we turn on an electromagnetic field. Sorry for that. It should be a dot. the divergence is the scalar product of B times B. Well, it's clear that the rate of change is proportional to B. To E, to the how hard we pull the electron, but it's also proportional to B because the degeneracy factor of the lowest Landau levels is B divided by 2 pi. And so all these factors can be obtained, this precise factor 1 over 4 pi squared can be obtained just by solving Dirac equation in a magnetic field. So this is a very strange situation. I find it analogous to the Hilbert hotel in mathematics. So here, somehow, by operating with the infinite number of electrons in the Dirac C, we can see that the number is. We can find. We do something that we do infinity minus infinity, and we find a finite number. But it's actually the result here is correct. Precise. So the number 1 over 4 pi squared is actually correct, actually exact, even when one turn on interaction between the electrons. Okay, but recently anomalies has been found to exhibit themselves in a regime that one would normally think as a classical regime. Basically a regime of fluid mechanics. Take this quantum field theory with electrons that interact with each other and heat it up to some temperature. If one has a finite temperature, then a distance scale much larger than the midfield path, basically we have a fluid that would flow and behaves like ordinary fluid that we play with in the bathtub. But we now know that anomalies, if the fluid have triangle anomalies, then we can see the effect of anomaly in hydrodynamics. And it has been first seen in the context of gauge gravity duality, or more precisely in the context of the fluid gravity correspondence, that where you put strongly interacting fluid in correspondence with a black hole with some fields in the background of the black hole. So the final result for the hydrodynamics of such a system, where the constituent, the original constituent particles have helicity, it looks like this. So if I write down the formula, let me explain this formula. This is the formula for the current, some current here. Five means the difference between left, right, and left-handed particle number. You see three terms in the current, and in a normal fluid there would be only two terms. One term is basically convection. That is, if you have a fluid that moves, it carries the charge with it. There is a term that one can be associated with diffusion. But there is another term here that is very special to the case when the fluid have the theory under consideration have chiral anomalies, and that is the contribution to the current proportional to the vorticity of the hydrodynamic flow. So in order to just illustrate how unusual this effect is, let's imagine for a moment that the same effect would behave in the case of a sugar solution. Okay, so if sugar behave in the way, in the same way as chiral non- and massless particle, we would have the following situation. Now, take a cup of water, and then let us drop sugar in. And sugar, let us recall, they are either left-handed or right-handed. There are two types of sugar. I forgot which type we can digest. I think the right or the left. Or maybe it depends on your political inclination. but let's imagine that you drop the two types of sugar into a cup of water and then rotate the cup of water. You rotate it, and then if sugar molecule behave in the same way as much less quarks in the quark gluon plasma we have, then left-handed molecules flow upward, right-handed flow downward. This doesn't, I think it doesn't happen in the case of sugar, but we can see that the effect of quantum anomalies induce this effect in relativistic hydrodynamics. Okay. But after the new terms in hydrodynamics, this new effect of rotation inducing current have been found using gauge gravity duality, people including myself have come back to just looking at trying to find out what had Landau and Lipschitz been missing in the derivation of hydrodynamics, and we think we now found a way to understand the anomalous effect in hydrodynamics in a more general setting. There are several ways to see that these terms are should exist. The original way that we were using is to try to reconcile hydrodynamic equation with anomalies and second law of thermodynamics. But now there are possibly simpler way of deriving these terms. But by looking at this effect outside gauge gravity duality, we now know that the effect does not depend on the coupling at all. It is just in the result of anomalies. It should exist outside the range of validity of gauge gravity duality. In particular, the same effect also should occur at weak coupling. And weak coupling is something that we should be able to understand. One should be able to understand.
So sorry, you say it doesn't put a coupling. You mean the coefficient of that term is independent?
The coefficient of that term depends only on the anomalies, chemical potential. Well, depending on the choice, the so-called hydrodynamic frame, it can depend on the equation of state. But that's it. But weak coupling, hydrodynamics, the theory that describes a fluid at distances larger than the that the mean free path can be obtained sequentially from quantum field theory. So starting from quantum field theory, that is the microscopic theory describing the particles, we can first derive the kinetic theory that is similar to the Boltzmann equation that Boltzmann wrote down to describe the dynamics of an almost ideal gas. And by solving the kinetic equations in the long wavelength regime, one can then derive hydrodynamics. So the weak coupling approach to hydrodynamics is different from the strong coupling approach, the much newer approach, in which one model the QFT as the bipole and then jump right away from QFT to hydrodynamics, bypassing the kinetic theory. But certainly this way of thinking about hydrodynamics is has a much longer history and is very traditional within plasma and condensed matter physics. So somehow we know that the both the anomalies exist in quantum field theory, and we know that hydrodynamics remembers the anomalies of the microscopic theory. So the question is, how does anomaly, how is anomaly encoded in the kinetic theory? And mostly a technical reason, I'm going to consider one of the most important examples of kinetic theory, that is Landau's Fermi liquid theory. Landau's Fermi liquid. So I noticed that there is hardly any condensed matter colloquium without an image of Landau. So here's my photo of Landau with his students. So Landau, what Landau was teaching, taught us to think about interacting, many-body interacting system at low energies as the system of quasi-particles. So instead of a system of n-body complicated interacting system, in most cases describe the system in terms of quasi-particles. So in the case of a system of fermions, these would be quasi-particles near the Fermi surface. In the case of Fermi liquids, that would be quasi-particles near the Fermi surface. And the only interaction that is important in Landau's Fermi liquid theory is the forward scatterings of quasi-particles. So the quasi-particles can be either quasi-particle above the Fermi surface or quasi-hole below the Fermi surface. And they can only interact by forward scattering. We can try to interpret the Landau's Fermi liquid theory as a result of integrating out the degrees of freedom that are far away from the Fermi surface. So after this integrating the procedure, one gets an effective action for the quasi-particles, and one can do some power counting to convince oneself that the only interaction that is potentially relevant, in this case marginally relevant, is the VCS channel interaction that would lead to the formation of superconductivity. So this, if the interaction is expansive in the VCS channel, then we would get Landau liquid behavior. So mathematically, the Fermi liquids are described in the orthodoxal Landau original description of the Landau liquid is based on a kinetic equation, in which one writes down the equation describing the time evolution of the distribution function of quasi-particles that is called Np of x, the number, the occupation number, the average occupation number with particle with momentum p at point x, and it's it evolve according to a certain Liouville type equation that is written right here. The only parameters of the Landau's Fermi liquid theory we need to know is the energy of a quasi-particle with momentum p. And that energy consists of two parts. There is a free energy part, basically the deviation of the energy from the Fermi energy level. So there is a Fermi velocity times the deviation of p and pf. And the interaction energy, the change of energy of a single quasi-particle due to the fact that there are other quasi-particles already in the system. So this function f, p, q here is basically the Landau parameter, the angular when you do the angular Fourier transform, you get the Landau parameter. And this theory is very simple, and this theory has a lot of prediction. One can compute the heat capacity, the spin susceptibility, the velocity of zero sound, and get the prediction that one can check in the case, for example, of helium 3. Now if we have anomalies in the original theory, then we would have to think about what happened when we turn on non-zero E dot B for some amount of time. So in the beginning, we have a Fermi sphere of left-handed fermions and a Fermi sphere of right-handed fermions. If we turn on E dot B, the number of left-handed and right-handed fermions becomes is not conserved. So we have a situation, and this Fermi sphere should shrink, and this Fermi sphere should expand. And the question is, how does it happen? How does the Landau's Fermi liquid theory know about this effect? How does the theory, the kinetic theory, knows which particle is left-handed and which particle is right-handed? How does one discriminate between particles with different chiralities? So one of the simplest thought one might have is that this discrimination happens through the magnetic moment of the quasi-particle. That means that these quasi-particles that we have interact with electromagnetism, not only through the minimal coupling, but there is also some non-minimal coupling. Basically, the energy of a particle is equal to p, energy without, in the absence of magnetic field, maybe plus or minus some geomagnetic ratio gamma times the product of p, unit vector p times b. And here we have the unit vector p because for a massless particle, we know that the direction of the spin is tied to the direction of momentum. For massless left-handed particle, the spin, say neutrino spin, would point in the opposite direction compared to the momentum, and for the right-handed particle, the spin would point to the direction parallel to p. So the magnetic moments that interact with the magnetic field would also point it this way. So this would make sure that the Landau's Fermi liquid theory knows which particle is left-handed and which particle is right-handed, and treat them differently. And hopefully one can see that the signs of the anomalies in the currents can be opposite signs. But in fact, it doesn't work. It doesn't work if one think about one effect that is now known under the name of the chiral magnetic effect, but it has been known before, and I worked on that, and Max Medvitsky is here also worked on this problem. So in order to see the necessity of the so-called chiral magnetic effect, let us imagine the following situation. Let us imagine that we have a system of fermions. In external magnetic field, put in magnetic field that is a static magnetic field, but in the field of a slowly varying scalar potential, A0. You mentioned that A0 or phi is changing, but changing very slowly in space. When the scalar potential changes slowly, we can use the local density approximation. So basically, in a very small region of space, we will have a Fermi system with a chemical potential that is equal to the local value of the scalar potential. Okay, so in other words, we will have a system that is only whose density also varies very slowly in space. The chemical potential, the local chemical potential, traces A0. That's similar to what happened in a neutron star or in a compact object. The chemical potential traces the gravitational potential. Okay, so when we use this local density approximation, we can understand how can anomaly be present in the equation of divergence of the current while the system, if we wait long enough, should be in a stationary or equilibrium state. So if we have a system in equilibrium state, we know that the divergence of the current should be zero, but the time derivative, it should be non-zero, but the time derivative here is zero because the system is static. So the divergence of the current is equal to B times E, but E is for a static case like what we are considering here is gradient of A0. And this equation can be satisfied if the current itself is equal to the chemical potential times B. Okay? Remember that the chemical potential traces A0. So if we take derivative of that, we will find exactly this expression. So the conclusion here that one can make based on very general consideration of local density approximation, stationary state, is that if we have an anomaly, then the system develops current. In this case, the left-handed and right-handed currents with opposite sign that are non-zero even in the ground state. So we have a ground state of the system with chemical potential, and the ground state have non-zero current. And that contradicts basic tenets of Landau's Fermi liquid theory. Something I would like to show mathematically in the next slide. So, one of the equations of Landau's Fermi liquid theory is the equation relating the charge current with the distribution function. So basically, the charge current, the particle number current, is equal to integral over dt of n of p times v of p, where v of p is the group velocity associated with momentum p. Okay, so now this equation is supposed to be exact in Landau's Fermi liquid theory. And now, if one look at this equation and do integration by part, we can pull dp to act on dn of p to the derivative of the distribution function. In the ground state, the distribution function has a jump. It is one inside some Fermi sphere, Fermi volume, and then jump to zero. So the integral is dominated on the surface. On that surface, the value of epsilon p is equal to mu on the surface. It's in the ground state. The Fermi surface corresponds to constant energy of the quasi-particle. And so this integral basically is an integral over some closed surface of the unit vector that goes out, that points out from this surface. Okay. So I'd like to ask my friends, mathematicians' friends, to prove that an integral of the unit vector over a closed surface, a unit normal over the closed surface, is equal to zero. And usually they have trouble. But as physicists, we know how to do that. We just have a balloon and then pump air into it, and the air will act force that is proportional to the pressure times this vector, and from the fact that the balloon doesn't move, we know that the integral has to be zero. Okay? So J is zero. So the Landau-Sperling liquid theory includes in its basis the fact that in the ground state of any Fermi liquid system, the current is zero. So it seems now that we have a contradiction between the prediction of chiral anomalies, triangle anomalies, with the foundations of Landau's Fermi liquid theory. So how are we going to solve this problem? So before doing that, let me reformulate Landau's Fermi liquid theory in a rather mathematically sophisticated way, which might seem useless at the first sight. So I'm going to write down the equation, the kinetic equation of Landau's, as the evolution equation of a Hamiltonian system, in which entropy, the distribution function, is treated as an operator. The time variation of that operator is equal to the commutator of the Hamiltonian with the operator. And for the Hamiltonian, I'm going to use the conserved energy of Fermi liquid, that is the kinetic energy, the energy of the free particle, plus the pairwise interaction energy of the Landau series, the energy that comes from forward scattering. In order for this equation and the Hamiltonian to give me the correct kinetic equation, I have to postulate some form of the commutator between entropy and entropy at another point in phase space. And by trial and error, one can see that there is, if one choose the commutator in this form, then we will find the correct equation of the Landau Fermi liquid theory. So this looks not very intuitive. Why the commutator between the occupation number should have this particular form? Where does it come from? And one can see that it should, the commutator should be of this form if one compute the commutator of two operators, let me call A and B. And these operators are one particle operator. Basically, they are linear functional of the occupation number, parameterized by some function A and B here. And if I use the form of the commutator that I postulated in the previous transparency, I find that the commutator of A and B have a very intuitive form. Basically, it is a one particle operator with a different function here, a function of P and X. But this function is nothing but just the Poisson bracket between A and B. So the commutation relation between between the occupation number is chosen in such a way that there is a correspondence between quantum commutator and the classical Poisson bracket, and that gives you the correct equation of Landau's Fermi liquid theory. So I think now I can explain Landau's Fermi liquid theory to mathematicians. It is just some Hamiltonian, special type of Hamiltonian system. So now, the Landau's Fermi liquid theory, once we apply to the Dirac particle, we have to be modified. And this fact is known within the condensed matter community as the effect of Berry curvature. If one look at the equation of the wave equation for the wave function of right-handed fermions with momentum p, for example, we have to, it is a two-dimensional spinner, and we have to solve this equation. So the wave function will be a two-dimensional tensor use of p, and one can construct a potential that lives in momentum space using this p, and this potential is important for the motion of classical wave of a wave packet. constructed from wave function of Dirac equation. So what condensed matter physicists know is that if one have a wave packet that one construct from solution to the Dirac equation and follow the motion of such a wave packet in external electromagnetic fields, then its motion is slightly different from motion of wave packets of solution to Klein-Gordon equation. So normally, when we are teaching classical electrodynamics, we write down the equation of motion of a particle like x dot equals to its velocity. So the group velocity is d epsilon p over dp. And p dot, the change of momentum, is the e plus the Lorentz force. But what is found for particles with spin 1/2 with definite chirality is that there is an extra term, p dot cross omega. And omega is the so-called Berry curvature that is related to the Berry phase that was defined in the previous slide. And the form of this Berry curvature that lives in momentum space is exactly the magnetic field of a magnetic moment monopole in momentum space, where the sign of the charge of the monopole at p equals 0 depends on whether we consider right-handed or left-handed particles. So this extra term makes sure that if you have two particles with opposite chiralities, two classical particles with opposite chirality, massless particle in external electromagnetic field, their trajectory would slightly diverge if we follow the classical trajectory. Any question? Okay, so one can formalize this using a symplectic formulation of classical mechanics. Basically, this is the action that would give rise to the equation of motion on the previous transparency. So this is the usual px dot term minus the Hamiltonian. So usually that one would be, when we integrate over p, would give us the Lagrangian. And there is the usual coupling of the particle with the electromagnetic field, basically integral of A over the word line of the particle. But in the case of the Dirac fermion, well, the massless fermion, one has to include into the classical action a term proportional to p dot, okay, times this potential in momentum space, calligraphic A. So now we have a almost complete symmetry between coordinates and momentum. So the most productive way to think about this Lagrangian is to combine the coordinates in momentum into one single variable psi A, where A runs 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and where this red term here combine all the first order derivative in time derivative terms, and in the Hamiltonian one can improve the energy and the potential energy. When we write down the equation of motion, we find the equation of motion, it is first order equation like the canonical equation, but now with a non-trivial symplectic structure that one has to compute from this omega A. And one can also give this equation a Hamiltonian interpretation as the equation of evolution with a given Hamiltonian, but with a special type of Poisson, with non-trivial Poisson brackets, where the commutator of 2 psi is the inverse of this matrix. So if we do the calculation, at the end we find the following formula: the commutator of p and p is non equal 0. Commutator of x and x is also non-zero. So coordinates of particle, in contrast to what we teach in quantum mechanics, the coordinates of this particle do not commute, and then the commutator of p and x do not look like a canonical commutator at all. Okay. So there is this, if omega was zero, we somewhat, this equation should be familiar. The commutator of the canonical momentum is equal to the magnetic field. But here there is also a magnetic field in momentum space. So one case where one can see the commutation relation is simple is the case when the magnetic field is equal to zero. Okay, so when the magnetic field is equal to zero, things simplify the commutator of momentum commute with each other, and the commutation relation between P and X look like usual, one. But the commutation, that is, by commutation, commutator, I mean the Poisson bracket in classical mechanics, is equal to the value of the magnetic field in momentum space. So what happened here is that this will mess up the commutation relation of the orbital momentum. If we compute the commutator of the orbital momentum, the non-zero xx Poisson bracket modified the commutator, and we find this the commutator is not SU2 algebra at all. But one can check that if we add to the orbital momentum a term p divided by 2 absolute value p, then we restore the commutation relation. So this is the manifestation of the fact that for relativistic particle like this, the momentum, the angular momentum is the sum of the orbital momentum and the spin, and the spin is pointing along the direction or opposite to the direction of the momentum. So it's consistent. Okay, so now one can try to modify the Fermi liquid theory. As we see, we have previously presented a formulation of Fermi liquid theory as a Hamiltonian system. So what we have to do here is to modify that Hamiltonian system, modify the rule of computing commutation relations of operators. So first of all, the phase space have to be modified. The phase space, because the Poisson bracket is non-trivial, we have to recalculate the phase space, and the phase space factor is dp dx for time 1 plus d dot omega. And now one can check that one now needs a rule to compute the commutation relation between the commutator of two occupation number in the phase space. The phase space is psi, that is both p and x. And let us postulate the commutator between a and b to be of this form. Okay, so it looks a little bit non-trivial, but in the case of the canonical Poisson brackets, one can see that this reduces to the previous equation that we have. You need just to integrate by part, and you will see that it's exactly the Poisson bracket times the occupation number. In the case that we have here at hand, this equation actually is a more preferred one. I think it is should be the correct one, although it relies on a bit of guesswork from our part. Now, if we have the commutation relation together with the Hamiltonian, we know how the equation of motion looks like. We just need to write down the commutator of the Hamiltonian with the distribution function to have the equation of motion of the distribution function. So from now on, everything can be done rather automatically, and we can derive the anomalies this way. But there is a, I think there is a better, there is a more a more elegant way to see the emergence of the anomalies by deriving first the non-anomalous the anomalous commutators between the density of particle at 2 points, equal time commutators. So usually when we have a non-relativistic physics, psi decker psi between two different points commute with each other. But here, if we use the rules that have been postulated in the previous transparencies, if we define the the density of charge in the usual way, and compute the correlation of the commutator, we find that this commutator is non-zero in the presence, especially in the presence of a magnetic field. So there are actually two terms for general choice Berry curvature. There are two terms: one proportional to the magnetic field, another proportional to something that is called, that I call here sigma, that depends on the values of, this is some sort of integral over the surface of the Berry curvature. And in the case of the Dirac particle, it would be equal zero for in the ground state. For the anomalies, only this part is important. But in condensed matter physics, this term actually is the one that leads to the anomalous Hall effect. So the coefficient k here is proportional to the integral of the Berry curvature through the Fermi surface. And that is quantized. It can be either plus 1 or minus 1, not 1 half. Plus 1 or minus 1 either when the particle are either right or left-handed. Okay, so why is that important? The next two transparency, I would show you how the non-zero, non-vanishing commutator of density is related to the anomalies. And first of all, as a byproduct, we can ask, what is the current in this modified Landau's Fermi liquid theory? So the current is can be obtained if we just take the density, compute the derivative with respect to time, and then try to find a vector whose divergence is equal to n dot. And we can do that. This is the total current in the new modified Landau's Fermi liquid theory. So the important thing here is that the usual formula of Landau's Fermi liquid theory, where the current is just equal to the sum of the current from different particles, is no longer valid. This is only one term in the current, but there are some other terms proportional to the that right now I don't have any physical interpretation of this term, but we know that these terms are non-zero in the current. But we, in the absence of electric field, we can check that the current, even in the presence of the Berry curvature, is conserved. In the, if the electric field is zero and the magnetic field is non-zero. Now we can ask, what happens if we add to the Hamiltonian the coupling of the particle to a scalar potential? So a scalar potential basically gives you electric field. So if the theory has anomaly, we have to be able to see it at this level. And actually we can see it here if we derive, if we compute the time derivative of the number density, the fact that m and n do not commute between points implies that we have additional terms in the right hand side of this equation. And not all of these can be absorbed into the current. There are parts that inherently cannot be absorbed in a gauge invariant current. And so we find that we can absorb part of that in the current, but the remainder is still non-zero, and it's exactly equal to E dot B. And we see that there is an anomaly here. And also, if for some cases, not exact, if the Berry curvature has a more asymmetric form than just the field of the monopole, we can also see an anomalous Hall current in the system. But the anomalous Hall current is not, it is not directly related to the anomalies. The anomaly is just non-conservation of currents in the presence of E dot B.
Okay, presumably at this point, if you deleted the grad cross sigma term by hand, what line up? Well, either one, if you deleted that by hand, you'd find either you didn't have an anomaly or something dreadful would happen to the system.
I delete this term or which term?
If you try to keep the KB term,
KB
term, just delete the grad cross sigma term by hand. Uh-huh. I assume that's completely inconsistent.
I think it's still consistent. This grad sigma times that is just the total derivative of a current. So it can be absorbed in the definition of a current. you're doing here.
I see.
Actually, it's actually not anomalous. This part is something that in the literature called the anomalous hole current. That is when you turn on electric field, when you turn on electric field, even in the absence of magnetic field, we have the hole current. That's current that flows direction. But we understand now is that this anomalous hole current and the anomalies they come from some very curvature on the Fermi surface. But the flux, the anomalies is sensitive only to the flux of the very curvature through the Fermi surface, but not to the details. And the anomalous hole current actually depends on the detail of how the very curvature is distributed on the Fermi sphere. And one can see also that the new modified Landau's Fermi liquid theory is consistent with the chiral magnetic effect, that is the emergence of non-zero current already in the ground state in finite magnetic field. And we see that if we look at the current, the usual Landau's current, or sometime I found in the literature they are called Migdal. I'm not completely sure about the history of that current. It's equal in the ground state, or in general in thermal equilibrium one can show that the usual current contribution is equal to zero. But there is a new non-trivial contribution that emerges from the flux of the very curvature through the Fermi surface, and the current is simply equal to mu times b, as is dictated by the anomaly. Okay, so let me conclude. Anomalies can be incorporated into Landau's Fermi liquid theory, and the anomalies can be shown to be related, right, can be argued to be related to the non-zero flux of the Berry curvature through the Fermi surface, and one should try to understand whether there is a relevance for the physics of real materials. For example, if we take a doped white semi-metal, where we have a system where electrons have two Dirac points, but we dope it so that there is a Fermi energy, some Fermi surface, whether one can see effects that would be associated with anomalies, for example, non-conservation of the difference between the number of electrons between two different points, or say the chiral magnetic effect, or more if we rotate the system, whether there would be we would induce the imbalance between the left and right-handed fermions in the bulk or in the surface. Yeah, thank you very much.
Hydrodynamical
coefficient C, did that turn out to be proportional to H part at the end? Or is that actually really a classical effect? H bar, I have to leave there, I have to calculate, and it's actually proportional to mean. I usually use H bar equal 1, but I can answer your question. It's proportional to mu squared, so it is a dimension full coefficient, but the coefficient in front of mu squared might have an H bar.
Well, I'm sure, shouldn't
it? Yes, so I can.
Because on the right hand side of the anomaly equation,
H bar squared equals.
So let's see.
H
equals C omega, VUD. So J is the number of particles in cubic seconds. It is length minus 3, length minus 3. This one is dimension length divided by time square. This D gives me 1 over the length. So, C is mu squared. So this is L over T squared. Now I have two power of come on, I get each bar squared. Then it's short.
What is the effect of this term for zero sum? Is there an effect that really quantifies the spectrum of the
zero sum? Something I haven't studied that. So the equation for n, I didn't write down the equation for the distribution function. So I have that written down. The next step would be to try to see what is that. I think following will happen. I think in the even in the absence of the magnetic field, the commutators is modified, so there might be already an effect in the absence of magnetic field. The zero sum will be.
Electrons have a mass, so is this relative to electrons? Would the Carl Hurley thought that is even classically violated?
There might be a regime where one can
high density,
the high density regime on the spin field can be treated as a more effect. Then
you said earlier that all fermions are electrons, so I wasn't sure.
It has to be massless.
Have you thought of the non-abelian version of this story?
Version of this story. I have not thought about the non-abelian version of this story.
Does this affect the stability criteria?
Yeah.
I mean, with your arguments of stability of liquid theory being modified, you think it could get instability?
So there is one place where clearly there will be an instability if one. So let me see. The instability in the function. So if suppose I have a theory of the Dirac fermions, massless Dirac fermion interacting with the dynamical U1 gauge here. So but QED, massless QED. Okay, massless QED in the, and then I prepare a state where the state where I have a Fermi sphere of right-handed fermion and the Fermi sphere of left-handed fermion with a different chemical potential. That state is actually unstable due to a magnetic instability because there is a chiral magnetic effect. That means that So the magnetic, any small magnetic field actually induces a current that feeds back into that magnetic field, and one can show that actually I think the end result is not known, but I think at the end what happened is that the chiral charge, the excess chiral charge, decays into some E dot V configuration at the end. That should be, one should be able to follow that.
You have a similar situation. You have the hypercharged current with the E dot V of the
hypercharge. Yes.
So,
So that is.
And then what happens is that one, if there is an instability.
Yes.
E dot V is inherently unstable coupling, right? Because it will accelerate around this.
I think there has been even some attempt to explain the seed magnetic field in the universe by saying that it's suppose we have, yeah, we have some initial state, for some reason the leptons or fermions have some chemical potential, different chemical potential. Chemical potential coupled with the hyperchargeon and drive.
Or would you have some periodic or some dynamics in the external field? You can feed this instrument. So you don't have to, not necessarily prepare it as an initial state, but you can pump this using some dynamics.
And I'm not sure how this is related to our moment.
Generally allows you to transfer the charge into the ego.
Okay, let's thank Sandy.